From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde in for Ross Reynolds. Sending juvenile offenders to jail can have dire consequences. That's according to a new study by the National Bureau of Economic Research. It's a centrist think tank based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And the study finds that kids who spend time in jail are 22% more likely to end up in jail as adults, 13% less likely to graduate from high school. But here in Washington state, the number of youth incarcerated has actually decreased by 36% over the past decade. Paul Howland joins us now to talk about the changes that we're seeing in this area in Washington state. He's Dean for Academic Affairs and Associate Law Professor at Seattle University. Professor Holland, thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, very glad to be here.
So what's the problem from a researcher's perspective with sending juvenile offenders to jail?
Well, the principal problem identified in the report, and this is certainly what we see in practice, is that it disconnects the youth from the resources in their community. It disrupts education, it takes them away from family ties, and it also has, and this has been something researched for many years, has a negative impact on the youth's perception of how the community sees him, what researchers often refer to as the labeling effect that often then leads, people have found, to continued criminal behavior.
We're talking about the effect of jailing youth with Professor Paul Holland. He's a professor at Seattle University. So what does the research suggest about the best alternatives to jail time for juvenile offenders?
What they have found is that, and what we've seen here in Washington state, is that there are evidence-based, community-based programs that provide careful monitoring and supportive services to youth and families that enable youth to remain in their homes, in their communities, and in their schools while the court proceedings go on, and all of this occurs with improved public safety results. In other words, as you noted in the intro, we have seen this in Washington state over the last 10 years. As we have reduced the use of juvenile detention, at the very same time, there's been a decrease in juvenile crime. And while I wouldn't be able to say that those are causally related, it's clear that using these community-based programs is compatible with increased public safety.
We're talking to law professor at Seattle U, Professor Holland, about a new study by the National Juvenile Justice Network that actually finds, part of the study finds, that Washington State has made a lot of progress over the last decade reducing the number of incarcerated youth. What are we doing right here in Washington State?
As indicated, we've tried these community-based programs that involve either electronic monitoring, day reporting, where the youth have to report to a program during the day, say after school, where they are supervised and then are returned home for later, for the rest of their day, when that works. And what we've also done in Washington is a structured decision-making at the time of intake. So judges make decisions about whether to detain youth, but even before that, probation staff at juvenile courts will make those decisions. And one of the big innovations in recent years was to design a structured instrument to look at specifically what are those factors that make it necessary to detain a youth, so that it wasn't simply, oh, a feeling that somebody had that this was a kid in trouble and needed to be detained, but that you could look at the data and decide which kids were at greatest risk of reoffending or not appearing, since those are the two concerns for which detention is a permissible response.
We're talking to Seattle U law professor, Professor Holland, about a new study that suggests sending juvenile offenders to jail can have bad consequences. I'm wondering how we compare here in Washington to other states when it comes to the decision about whether or not to go for jail or some of these alternatives.
Well, as the report you mentioned earlier from the National Juvenile Justice Network pointed out, just released yesterday, we've been singled out as one of the states that's done more work in the last decade on reducing the use of secure detention and developing alternatives. So in that sense, we're doing well. Most of the states in the country have reduced their use of detention over the last decade. And so what we've had the benefit of support from various foundations as well as leadership from policymakers and this commitment to evidence-based practices to do more. Now, there are still several things that we ought to be paying attention to find further improvements in this area. Specifically, one thing that we are singled out for that's somewhat questionable is our practice of detaining youth who haven't committed any crimes at all but are truant. And that is something written into state law, and it is a fairly common practice in many parts of the state, and it's actually something that not only has potential adverse consequences for the youth involved, but it actually has led to the state forfeiting federal funds available for juvenile programming because we are out of compliance with federal standards in this regard.
So kids here in Washington State end up in jail for skipping school?
They do, if not initially. So if you are petitioned as a truant youth, you show up in court. And if the court finds that you are a truant youth, the court then orders you to go to school and perhaps to do some other things. And then if you're found in violation of that order, you can be held in secure confinement. And this is fairly common.
Well, just to take it then a step further with some of these specifics, let's say someone's charged with truancy. What's an example of the kind of diversion program they might get as an alternative to jail time?
Well, diversion, as applied in either the truancy context or in the juvenile criminal context, is an opportunity for a young person to meet with community members, not in a formal court proceeding, but a panel of volunteers who are supervised, who will ask the youth some questions about what happened and about their circumstances, and then they will typically be given some form of community service to perform as a way of acknowledging their responsibility for their behavior, but also having the opportunity to have it all taken care of outside of the court system.
Paul Holland is Dean for Academic Affairs and Associate Law Professor at Seattle University, and he's telling us about a new national study about the problem with jailing juvenile offenders, which has some positive news here for Washington State. The report finds that we're doing a relatively good job of finding some of these alternatives. You know, some people listening are probably thinking, well, you know, but there are certainly situations where jail time is necessary. What are some of those situations?
Well, obviously, if you have a young person who's committed a serious violent act, then there are consequences that should follow from that, and in most instances, those will involve secure confinement. The Washington sentencing scheme for juveniles provides just for that, so that there's a grid that looks at your criminal history and the severity of the offense of which you're found guilty, and if you score high on that combination, then the court has the option of putting you into secure confinement. But one of the things that people really need to pay attention to is that, and the Comeback States report from the Juvenile Justice Network mentions this, is that we still have a practice of allowing detention for relatively minor offenses. And if one were to sit in a juvenile court, as I do in the clinic that I teach in at Seattle U, on a frequent basis, you will see a large number of cases coming through these days that don't involve serious violence or weapons or great risk of harm to the community, but instead involve incidents arising at school, again, not with weapons, or incidents within a family. We've seen a great increase in recent years in intrafamily offenses, teens fighting with their parents, people get angry, something gets thrown, and that case comes in as an assault charge or a malicious mischief charge. And those are instances in which those youth could be detained, and often a court will detain them for a short period of time because the family needs a cooling off period. But the NBER study points out that it's not so much the length of detention that has these negative effects, but it's the fact of detention at all. So it's really incumbent upon us to develop alternatives for families in crisis that don't involve adjudication and detention, in the same way that we need to develop alternatives to misbehavior at school that don't involve criminalization of the youth and the potential negative consequences that come with incarceration.
Well, last question then. What more does, say, King County need to do to improve in the area of dealing with juvenile offenders?
You know, I know the county leaders are certainly committed to doing the many things that they've already been doing. The prosecutor's office has developed a new diversion program that has been devoted to working with youth in Rainier Valley. So I think we need to continue to emphasize that piece there, because one of the things that we've also seen in the county and around the country is that even as the numbers of youth in detention have decreased, the disproportionality as it affects racial and ethnic minority youth has remained hard for us to solve. And so that is something that remains a priority and must remain a priority as we move forward.
All right, Paul Holland, thanks so much for telling us about it.
Thank you.
He's Dean for Academic Affairs and Associate Law Professor at Seattle University. And we were talking about a new study by the National Bureau of Economic Research about the problems with jailing juvenile offenders.